Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Greg Baer, co-author of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. And today, I am joined once again by our special guest host and psychologist, author, and early childhood advocate, Kathy Hirsch-Pasek. Kathy, welcome.
Thank you, Greg. I love being here.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, we're talking with Isabel Howe, Executive Director of the Stanford Accelerator for Learning and the author of Love to Learn, The Transformative Power of Care and Connection in Early Education. Isabel has spent her career at the intersection of learning, innovation, and impact. Isabel, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you, Greg and Kathy, for having me on the podcast. Such a joy.
And Isabel, Kathy and I share this Pittsburgh connection, and you know here at Remaking Tomorrow that we take deep and daily inspiration from America's and Pittsburgh's favorite ever neighbor, Fred Rogers. And Fred Rogers often said that it's through relationships that we learn best and grow best. And so when we hear that quotation, what do you think of, and how does it relate to you, your work, and your book, Love to Learn?
Well, I think that Fred Rogers captured in this beautiful sentence what decades of neuroscience and other sciences and education research have confirmed, that learning is fundamentally relational. Our brains are social. We learn with and through others. And that's really what a lot of my writing have been focused on, through Love to Learn and other writings. Because I'm very, very concerned about what's happening in our world of relationships, where I perceive that there is a relational deprivation crisis that has been very well spoken about for adults, but not as much for young children. So thus my call for action, leveraging all this great work that Fred Rogers had inspired us for, to ensure that relationships are the soil in which learning takes root.
So Isabel, I'm in love with your book. I think everybody out there should buy this book. And I want to unpack it a little bit because I couldn't agree with you more. There is a relational crisis, but where do you think this is coming from? What's going on out there? And why is everybody disconnected?
Different societal factors that are driving this disconnection. So it's not like one thing that is happening. There's one factor that's at the family level where, as we all know, you know, fertility rates are declining. So as a result of this fact, our young children have less and less siblings within family settings. The other factor within families that's happening also that may be less transparent is that because adults have less friends themselves, what the consequence of this is that you have less adult friends around young children. One stat that I quote in the book, but I continue to think is really, really fascinating and concerning, is only 3% of children in the US have interacted meaningfully with an adult above age 65 who is not a family member. So essentially, we live increasingly in age-segregated societies where our young children and our older adults are not interacting in healthy ways anymore. So that's an interesting pattern that could be addressed with more efforts. Another big one societally, which is more and more structured activities and less free play. So I see it a lot in my neck of the woods, as I call it, in my little Palo Alto area where Stanford University is based, where a lot of children are raised from almost the earliest years of life to be in very, very structured settings for activities. So they are driven from, tiny soccer to arts to music class, anyway. And there is less and less room for, for children to interact freely with other children. So as a result of this, what we are seeing societally is very, very clear. Children are playing less with others. And as a result of this, they have less friends. So the number of friends is in critical decline for our teenagers in the US and also globally. And then last but not least, technology. So technology is having an interesting impact both on children, but also on adults and specifically parents, where we all are more and more on those technology platforms and devices, and as a result are spending less time with in-person relationships.
There's so much to unpack there. And I know, Kathy, you probably want to dig into AI and other matters so much. Before we dig into some of the specific things that you've just cited, Isabel, let's pull back a little bit. You're an author. You understand the power of words. So many of us who work either in or on behalf of the field of education, we've long thought of child-centered education as the gold standard. You flip that phrase a bit to say, yes, I understand what we mean when we talk about child-centered education, but we really need to talk about relationship-centered learning. Can you just say a few words about the flip of those few words and why you think they're so meaningful and impactful?
Thank you for raising this, Greg. Child-centered education, the problem that I have with it, which is it has a lot of beautiful things attached, obviously, to have more differentiated approaches to each child and all these things that are really good about it. However, it misses this opportunity to remind everyone that we learn socially and with others. And it's not only learning, it's learning and well-being. We thrive as humans through human connections. So by using those words of child-centered, my concern is that this may drive us towards systems that are more and more individualistic. And related concern is that we are isolating our children even more than they may be already.
So I got to build on that about what you mean by others, okay? And I want to take two cases. One, social media. So I'm texting to a friend. How social relational is texting? And then, I've got to jump into it. I mean, this holiday season, I saw four toys for kids that promised they were going to be friends and be companions. And I wondered if you want to talk a little bit about that.
So on social media, there is clearly a benefit of certain technology that can actually enhance human connection. So when, you mentioned a text or texting others, the other example that I really like myself is FaceTime from a young child with grandma or grandpa. Great use of technology, especially if grandma and grandpa do not live in the same city or are at a distance on that day. Amazing way that technology actually makes us closer to important people in our lives. Now, my concern, Kathy, is when technology actually does something different, which is that it starts displacing actual human relationships. That's a concern that social media may have, but certainly this category that is emerging fast and furious of AI companions, because those AI companions have been shown, for some of them, to have this negative impact of replacing or decreasing human relationships over time. So, for example, we did a study on replica.ai at Stanford with young adults. And that particular study showed a slight displacement of human relationships for those who were using this platform more heavily. This study has been replicated by OpenAI and MIT on the heavy use of ChatGPT for companionship. We, by the way, have known for a long time, there have been some other studies on games and other things in Japan that had shown this risk of displacement of human relationships. you know, you have a category of people who are more and more embedded, if you'd like, into those systems. And then you add emotional manipulation that some of those tech companies are using, including psychophantry and other techniques, where people like more and more those machines, and as a result are spending more and more time away from human connections.
This is Greg Baer, here with Kathy Hirsch-Pasek. We're talking with Isabel Howe, author of Love to Learn, The Transformative Power of Care and Connection in Early Education. Isabel, when you're not writing about love and learning, you serve as the executive director of the Stanford Accelerator for Learning. And the Accelerator houses such internationally respected research centers as the Stanford Center on Early Childhood and research initiatives like the Digital Learning Initiative focused on cutting-edge educational challenges. So there you are in Northern California, great pressures in industry and in higher education to find the new thing, to develop the new thing. And here you are talking about relational health. When you think about that cutting edge research or the cutting edge development that's having, how are you helping the ideas that you express in Love to Learn to show up in what's being invented there in Northern California?
Yeah, if we could have every tech developer or big tech company think through this very simple question, is this technology enhancing human connections or not? Is it making us more social or not? Very, very simple. The good news that I find in my work and in my interaction with a lot of tech companies and tech employees around, you know, here in Silicon Valley, is that once you bring up that question, people actually are very, very supportive of embedding it into their technologies. It's maybe not obvious that they should ask themselves that question. So I've been on a little mission, if you'd like, to ensure that every edtech developer asks that very, very foundational question. And we need this urgently because with artificial intelligence, what those chatbots do very well is one person to one machine. So they are not social. They are not driving social interactions. They are actually doing exactly the opposite. So there is a big risk in this first incarnation of Gen AI tools that those tools actually are risking isolating learners even more than they have ever been. However, this amazing technology of AI and including its generative applications can also be used for social interactions among humans. So it's really more like, how do we convince all these edtech developers and big tech companies that there is potential there and make sure that this coming year is a social year of AI as opposed to, you know, one where we are isolating people even further?
I always talk about it as supplementing social interaction as opposed to substituting it. And I want to extend what you've been talking about a bit, Isabel. It seems to me, and you say in your book so beautifully, we're getting numb to this social interaction where it's declining so much in social connection, and that it's a real issue for kids. But I want to argue it's a real issue for parents too. They're not watching you jump off the board at the pool. They're not really even watching you as you cross the street. What do we do about that?
Absolutely. And that's actually one of the areas I think that needs to be elevated a lot more in the discourse, because I don't think that we as adults are fully realizing the implications of it. So the average American now checks their device every day more than 200 times. It's actually the exact stats is 205. And this was as of a year ago. So I'm sure that over the past few months, it has continued increasing, and we'll get the later stats in a few weeks for this past year, but 205. So that means that an adult may have more than 200 opportunities or risks that a beautiful, playful or conversation interaction with a child is interrupted. And what it does is that it signals to the child that the device might actually be more important than they are.
So just, I have to tell you, I did a little calculation while we were talking on the 205 number. That means that if you have a 16-hour day, assuming maybe your phone goes away while you're sleeping, you're checking your phone every 4.5 minutes. Yikes.
Well, ideally, they're not doing it during this podcast because they're listening so closely to what's happening here. And Isabel, before we close the podcast with some personal questions, I actually want to ask you and Kathy, I want to ask you too. So, is there brain science? Is there mapping that shows us what's happening in either adults or kids' brains in the weakening of the relational health about which you're speaking, Isabel, and Kathy, for which I know you advocate?
An important voice. Educators are noticing that children's capacity for socialization is evolving quite materially. The other thing from a brain science perspective is we as a human species have a brain size that has been essentially optimized for a reasonably large set of relationships relative to other animal species. And that number of relationships is called the Dunbar number. It's generally 150 social relationships that most of us have. So, by the way, this is in general the average size of a wedding is about 150, and that connects to that number. My question is if we are entering a time when those social connections are actually decreasing, starting with our youngest, what will it do to our brains? Because we have known for a long time that relational deprivation has meaningful negative impact on many aspects, including learning, including thriving, including health. You know, whether it's from the Romanian orphanages or other studies that have been conducted, relational deprivation for humans is not a good thing from a brain development perspective. It has some really interesting implications if we take a long-term view on our human species and what will it do to our brains and our ability to further connect with humans.
And I'll just augment what Isabel said, Greg. Humans as a species were endowed with a social brain. Full stop. We learn through social interaction. And in fact, research in the last 20 years has shown that the back and forth interaction between adult humans and little people humans is what builds brain structure and connectivity. So your brain is fundamentally different if you don't have these interactions than if you do have these interactions. We also have the very scary potential of fooling the human brain into thinking that something is social that is not. And that's actually dangerous.
Isabel, we are sure that many of our listeners will be eager to get their hands on a copy of your book. It's a book full of hope about the power of human relationships. And so many readers like to get to know the author a little bit. So we want to close our conversation today with what we'd like to call a lightning round, a set of personal questions. Your first answers that come to mind, there aren't wrong answers. So you ready to play?
Yes.
All right, Isabel, you once co-starred with Grover on a Sesame Street episode about early childhood innovation. Three words that describe that experience.
Magical, joyful, inspiring.
Ooh, that was fast. All right, let's go with this one. You are an instructor-level kung fu practitioner. What has the martial arts taught you about yourself?
Learning. So, what I love about martial arts in general, and certainly about Kung Fu, is that you are on a learning journey. There's no never perfection. You're constantly learning, which is my philosophy also in my work, but certainly in martial arts.
During your childhood, who was a caring adult in your life that helped you grow through the love that they shared?
So there are multiple of them. I was really lucky to have a lot of loving adults. Certainly my parents, number one, but also two early childhood educators who I believe transformed my very own trajectory. including Mrs. Combs, who was an early childcare educator, and a year later, Mrs. Lenoir. Those two incredible women transformed my trajectory. I was a late everything when I was young, late talker, late walker. So they really supported me with a lot of specialized support, but also a lot of love that made the whole difference.
Isabel, I was a late everything as well. As you were answering that, I thought of Mrs. Valente, my kindergarten teacher, who had been an artist initially in her career. And her classroom, the environment, the atmosphere she created just came alive, and we all came alive with it. Before we go, just one more question, Isabel. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Be present.
Oh, I love that answer. Well, we both want to thank you so much and the Stanford Accelerator for Learning. Isabel, I love your book, Love to Learn, The Transformative Power of Care and Connection in Early Education. And be sure to be present and love your kids more.
Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.